welcome to Tabletop Game Talk, On Topic, a show where we talk about tabletop gaming topics of all kinds. I'm one of your hosts, Fletcher.
I'm Kitty.
And I'm Chris.
Today we're talking about games that are passed down through the generations. With the rise of the board gaming hobby over the last two decades, is what we plan to pass down to our children different than what we were taught as children ourselves? And as a bonus, Chris says we'll also tell you how to turn your kids into gamers.
Because we're experts. But first, a thank you to our Patreon friends of the show, Emil Jill Jam, Georgia, Adam Harrison, the SGC, and Thomas Achi Reddy. And a huge thank you to all of our other patrons as well. All right, Fletcher, I have to get used to your opening intro. It's radio intro, and I really like it. It's just different than what Kitty and Josh do, which is just trash.
We need some, like, smooth jazz to go
with it. I mean, I could change it, or I could really make it very radio if you prefer. I have 2 years of radio experience.
I should play the intro music, and then you can see what that tempo is, because we used to do that.
I do. I hear it in my head.
Okay.
I mean, like bump, bum, 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 bum.
Have you caught up completely on the backlog of all of our episodes yet?
No.
Okay. Neither had Josh. Josh listens now, and sorry, Josh. But anyway, let's see. New stuff. There's a couple things I do want to mention. Kitty and I are doing the Dice Tower News. We've mentioned that a few times. I'm going to drop a few of those in this feed just for those who know that we're doing it but don't know what it is. So if you see something show up on Friday and wonder why Kitty and I sounds like you were reading scripts, that's because that's what that is. But it's short, it's sweet, it's awesome. Everyone should listen. And I'm only going to do it probably, let's see, for the month of February. I'm going to say the month of February, we're going to have bonus Dice Tower News in our feed.
So feel free to skip it.
No skipping it. Tom's gonna be like, why did these I have such great download numbers on these episodes? I'm like, that's because we were so good. And also I linked to it from two different channels. If you are following me or following us on BGG, which is tabletopgametalk.com/BGG, you will know that I backed my first game of the year. So I'm only backing 10 Kickstarters this year. And I just want to mention I'm backing Suburbia Collector's Edition. And if you want to discuss why I might have done that, you can go over to BGG and we talk about it there. But it is a quick nutshell. I've never played it. It's getting great reviews. Well, it's gotten great reviews. And the components look amazing. You have never played Suburbia, right?
No.
Nope.
All right. It's a tile-laying, city-building game. It's a Euro game, but with a ton of theme. And it looks really cool. And I am a father.
Hooray!
Hooray! Congratulations.
Thank you. So Sydney gave birth to, I have to get it right, it's Zachary Krause Steele. So we chose Sydney's maiden name as his middle name. Since Sydney is the end of the Krause line, we wanted to carry it on one more generation. And this is his first day home. Literally, we walked in the door with him as we record 8 hours ago. And we traded off.
You got out of the hospital so much earlier in the day than I did.
Yeah, there was a blizzard going on, so we decided to go before the snow hit again. So
yeah, it's probably a good plan.
Yeah, I will say that I was not prepared for how sleep deprived I would be.
I tried to tell you.
Yeah, you just can't understand
it. You can't understand it until you live it. It's true.
Yeah. And you stay, you're energized and awake until you're like, he won't sleep anywhere unless you're holding him. And then you're like, okay, now I have to stay awake. He's sleeping. Everyone else is quiet. I listened to a lot of podcasts last night. A lot of them. So, yeah, you'll hear a
Did
lot
Did you catch
more.
Up on Tabletop Game Talk?
good. I see what you did there. I did add another Keyforge podcast, though, so Bouncing Death Quark. I'm going to try that one out. So, a lot of NPR stuff, a lot of This American Life, those types of things. Stuff you should know.
I joked for a while that Player 3 knew the McElroy's voices as well as me and my husband for a while because I listened to all of them, My Brother, and Me. Yep. Back catalog when he was a baby.
Yeah, in order to get Zach to listen, I would have to give him one of my AirPods. And everyone says he looks like me, and in certain pictures, I'm like, okay, yeah, he looks like a tiny scrunched me. But he has Sydney's ears, which are very open, and the AirPods don't actually fit really well. So I'm not going to give my two-day-old AirPods for his birthday. We'll wait until he's 2 years old, and then we'll see how those ears grow in. And all of this is pertinent because Heirloom Games, I saved this until this event. Because now having a kid, it like what you think is going to happen is totally, and how you think you're going to feel is totally different than what actually happens. And like, you're just not prepared for it. So I needed to wait until afterwards to be able to have this conversation. And yeah, so we're going to do this from three different angles, as we often do. So Kitty has a one-year-old who's already totally into eating games. I have a 2-day-old. In fact, their birthdays are, what, 6 days apart? 5 days apart?
5 days apart, yeah. Zach was actually born on Player 3's birth or due date.
Yeah. So
yeah, and that was my due date last year.
Yep, and Player 3 was born a week early. So, which Zach was too.
Yep.
But yeah, so they will get to know each other really quite well, and maybe they'll be gamers. And then Fletcher, what children do you have in your life?
Let's put you on the spot.
I have no children that I'm aware of.
Got it. So, do you have like nieces, nephews, cousins, like young kids?
I have cousins, but all my cousins are around my age. I think my youngest cousin is 20.
Did you grow up with them?
Some of them, yeah. Some of them I'm really close to. I consider more like my sisters than like cousins.
Good. So we're going to use that. And you have a sibling, right?
No.
You're only child? Man. Yeah, I might as well be an only child. I have two brothers, one who's a year and a half younger than me. But
I can talk about this from how my dad introduced me to games.
Ooh, all right.
Yeah, you were once a child. We were all once children.
I was never a child. Yeah, I had a brother when I was growing up. So up until I was 13, I had a brother who was a year younger than me. And then my parents got a divorce and my brother went to live with my dad and I lived with my mom. So then I was kind of like an only child through my teenage years. And then my mom got remarried and had another. So I have a half brother who's 20 years younger than me, which we were never really that close because obviously at 20, I'm off in college and my own life. But so that's my childhood stuff. And Kitty, we know you have tons of siblings, like 16 of them.
Two. Yeah, 16, exactly. No, I have two sisters and a brother. I'm second of four. But I do think we come from this from a slightly different perspective, too, because my parents are also pretty nerdy sort of gamers. And so I have had some games passed down to me. And yeah, so I don't know if that was your experience growing up, Chris. Did your parents play games a lot?
So my parents my mom was 18 when she had me. My dad was 19. So by the time my earliest memories of them, I was 4 or 5. And they were in their early 20s in the 80s. So like literally 1980, you know, my mom was, I think she turned 26 maybe. No, 24 at the time. And I mean, I think back to it now to have like a 6-year-old at 24. I have no idea how anyone does that. But it was the 80s. But they didn't really...
You have a lot more energy then.
Yeah, I guess. Well, I guess that's true. You can run around after them, but it's still crazy. But they would just hang out with their friends all the time, and they would play games with them, but it was like Risk. That was the big game. Risk and possibly poker, but usually not. So those types of board games we had, but I don't remember a lot of my mom playing games with me, except for like maybe Sorry or Trouble. But I think that was more, here, have this and play with your brother. So, which we're already into our first question, which was, what were the first games we remember learning to play? Because this episode, I put questions in there because I want to make sure we all answer these. So, but yeah, I mean, the typical stuff I remember, I don't remember who taught me chess. I'm pretty sure it wasn't an immediate family member, but someone taught me chess. It might have been, I think it was like a friend of my father's or something like that. Checkers, obviously, I remember playing that. But Risk, Rummy, and Cribbage were like... Rummy and Cribbage, I learned that from my grandparents. And we played that all the time.
Of course you did.
Yeah.
You only learn that from your grandparents.
Exactly. And you have to be a grandparent before you can teach it. That's the one that like skips generations. Like,
yeah.
You have to like pass it down. There's genetic disorders that do that too, right? I think cribbage is a genetic disorder. No offense.
I was just waiting for it.
What about you guys? What are like some of the first games you guys remember playing? Like being taught to play by your family?
I'm going to say like the clearest memory that I have is actually like Monopoly at my grandfather's house. Because I really like board games, but as I have mentioned before, I'm an only child. And my grandfather really liked board games, and really the only times that like I could really play board games with the family is when we would go and visit my grandfather, because my dad is working, he would work late, and my mom wasn't super interested in really playing games, so the only time that we would get together as a family and play games is like when we would visit other family members, and that's what like my grandfather would like to do. He would like to play board games. So I have very clear memories of like a kid learning how to play Monopoly on my grandfather's dining room table.
Did you play by the Monopoly rules or by the standard house rules?
The standard house rules. So incorrectly.
Perfect.
I remember so many games from my childhood. Like, I don't know that I can narrow it down to a few. I remember my dad teaching me chess very early, and we had a tiny travel size, like, pegboard chess board that we would play on. And I just loved that they were, like, tiny carved wooden pieces. And that was a memory I have with him. But we would play Risk every Thanksgiving with my cousins. We would play Monopoly. We'd play Parcheesi, Sorry. We played all of those games. We also had games like The Amazing Labyrinth, which I think we had to buy at a specialty game store. My parents are huge nerds, and they're really into this kind of thing. My mom was the person I knew who first bought Settlers of Catan. You know, we had it in our household for years. She bought us Ticket to Ride and these kinds of games that are now more gateway games, but at the time were like new and exciting, interesting games for everyone to play.
Yeah, I remember there was like these different stores in the mall that they still exist today. They're just kind of like your generic toy store, like your mall toy store. But they used to have
Like a KB Toys,
yeah. But they used to have a section of games. They don't anymore. But it was like a bunch of Avalon Hill games, because that was like where you got your really in-depth war simulation games. Or it wasn't House on the Hill, but some equivalents to that and things like that. So, yeah, that was where you would go if you wanted to get the cool games. And you could get D&D books there as well. They had all kinds of different role-playing books. Now they don't have anything in those stores, because now you have specialty stores where all they have are games. But, man, the 80s. Good times.
I'm talking more like 90s.
All right, fine, the 90s, whatever.
Because I'm about a decade behind you.
The 90s actually had Wizards of the Coast stores, like mid to late 90s, where you could go in and buy Magic, but they were also a full-fledged board game store in the 90s. And they kind of came in and went out really quick. That was their attempt at like capitalizing on Magic and just having their own stores. But they never really took off, so they ended up closing almost as quickly as they opened up. But I thought they were cool stores.
Gaming memory you brought up for me is my cousin had a huge Magic collection that we were not allowed to touch. They were all sleeved and in binders, and it was like, you can't touch Josh's Magic cards. don't do it.
Yeah, when I was playing games, there was no such thing as a collectible card game. Fletcher, what is your memory?
Oh, I was going to say, you were talking about shopping and buying games. My memory is I remember going with my grandfather, and we would go to like the Goodwill or the Salvation Army and buy board games there.
And be missing pieces, of course.
And it could potentially be missing pieces. And that was always like half the fun, is that you would get it home and then you'd read the directions and see if the box contained everything that you needed. But I got to play a lot of like weird and interesting board games that way.
Yeah. And you can get,
that's cool.
Yeah. You could get games for $1.50, you know, sometimes exactly. 50 cents.
Nothing.
Yeah. I never picked up. Well, I can't say I never did, because I do remember going to garage sales as a kid and seeing like board games for 50 cents or something like that. So I had to have at some point, but I don't think anything kind of stuck with me. But yeah. So we have a couple listener feedback inputs. Again, just had a baby. So and I told myself I wasn't going to use the kitty excuse that I'm tired. I'm not tired. I'm energetic. I just have no focus on anything. My head is all over the place. So Fletcher, tell us about Tim.
So Tim says he remembers getting a choir from his parents, but doesn't remember playing with them. But once he did play, he fell in love with the game. Later, he played with his mom and also...
Yeah. So this one, I read this, and then the game store down the street from us, the Gift of Games in Grayslake, they have like a couple copies of a choir in there. And then when Tim was saying this, I'm like, I almost want to get this, but I didn't because we were literally, again, back to baby, we stopped at the game store just before we went to the hospital. And we played a couple of games of Keyforge. So that's when I saw Acquire. And then we went to the hospital. So I'm like, I can't buy Acquire right now because I'm going to the hospital.
So Tim adds, my aunt was more of the gamer in the family, and she always had something new for us to play. When I was older, she gave me a handmade Crokinole game. I had no clue what it was until years later when I became part of the hobby. I have a feeling she was more of a gamer than I thought. I miss her, and I bet she would have gone to Gen Con with me any year.
Yeah, this one, I think this is kind of interesting when you look back at the gamers. Well, just the family we had, our aunts and uncles especially. I had an aunt, and I honestly don't even know if I ever met this aunt, but she would send us Christmas gifts every year. And even though I have no recollection of meeting her, what she would send us would always be exactly what we wanted without us ever communicating that to her. And I have no idea. I just had this like memory of her. And I had a lot of aunts and uncles, but when I think back at like playing games, a lot of times it was with aunts and uncles. And I just kind of took it for granted because when you grow up with it, you don't even realize that's something special that you can do. So I relate to Tim here.
Christopher Dong says, the earliest adult game that he remembers being taught was Avalon Hill's Panzer Blitz in the 1970s. And I think I vaguely remember this game. I was not born in the 70s, but I think I've actually played this game. He says, now how's that for an introduction to board games? I'm not sure why my dad bought it. It wasn't to play with me, but it ended up being an eye-opening and formative purchase for me. I played a few games with him after being taught it, and many, many more games by myself, playing both sides. This was the beginning of my historical war game hobby addiction.
Yeah, this one, it is. And you know something? So I did say at the top, I made Kitty read, that we're going to teach you how to have your kids like be gamers. I really have no idea how to do this, but I do know that if you look back at how we got hooked on games, and if you take that example, it's not that hard, but I also know you can accidentally get your kids interested in something without even knowing that you did it. You know, if you look at the things that you are most interested in now and trace it back, it's usually one of these offhanded, someone introduced you to something somewhere and you just took to it. And for some reason, that just wired your brain to be like, yes, I want to play war games. I love this stuff.
So we have been playing Wingspan a lot in my family. I have brought it over to my parents' house and it is actually still over there because it was such a big snowstorm. I didn't want to get it wet walking home with it. So, but we've been playing and my niece is 5 and she's not old enough to understand the game yet. But when people were taking their turns, she'd come sit in their lap and watch what they were doing and still be involved in the game, even though she couldn't really play with us. And because it's my family and we're all totally goofy, my sister was singing bird parodies, including The Birds Are Back in Town, which went on, I think, longer than the original song goes on. And just making those really like fun experiences, something that, you know, my niece is going to remember growing up. That's what we did. Like, that's fun, that it's not just like, oh, like, you know, my crazy aunt has these wacky games. It's like, oh, my crazy aunt brings over these wacky games and everyone had a blast playing them. And we would do that. And then both times we got out Wingspan, it was, we played a game and then somebody was like, okay, now we have to play another one. And we played 2 or 3 in a row both times. And it's a good experience. And it just having those fun experiences around your kids is a way to make them want to be a part of it.
Yep. And letting them be a part of it or, mm-hmm. or not. Like, you know, I mentioned my parents playing Risk. I was never allowed to play Risk. So I was like in the other room and they were playing this adult game and I wanted to play it because it was an adult game. Of course you want to play it, but I never got to play it. And I think that's why when I first got a chance to play Monopoly with a kid that was maybe 4 or 5 years older than me, I think I was maybe 10 or 11, and he was, I might have been younger, maybe 8 or 9, and he was in middle school. And so we played that over and over and over, and it was finally a chance for me to get to play this adult game. I don't know if I would have been as excited if my parents would have said, oh, yeah, you can always play games with us. I'm like, oh, that's Monopoly. Yeah, I've played that before. And maybe we never would have got it to the table. Instead, it was, oh, you have a board game. I want to play that. Teach it to me. Like, it's crazy how that can happen, because either way can like trigger this, I want, like, change your life type of experience.
Yeah, I think something that my family does really well is involving the kids in the process. So, it's not just like, oh, she was watching us play. It was, she would come and sit in my mom's lap, and she'd be like, my mom would be like, all right, you have to hold the cards for me. You have to be very careful. But you have to also be very aware of the child's level of helpfulness, because player three is not able to be helpful at all. And he was getting passed around like the first player marker, except one ahead. He kept being like, all right, your turn is going to be, like, you're the furthest from having to turn, so you have to hold him while we go and make sure he doesn't eat any of these eggs that look so delicious. It's ridiculous.
It looks like Easter candy.
It does.
Almost. It really does.
Yeah. In fact, I think we should get, like, those little mini Cadbury eggs and play the game with those when Easter comes up, because that's only a month or two away now.
No, you're really going to confuse players. That's a bad idea.
That is a terrible idea.
Didn't I have more eggs on the board?
That's sort of like part of the thing. It's like, you can keep your eggs, you can use your eggs to play cards, or you can eat your eggs. But if you eat your eggs, you can't play cards with them later. So, all right. So this is, you guys have any other like childhood memories, learning to play new games?
I mean, I have a bunch of childhood memories learning how to play new games, like I said, mainly with my grandfather, because he liked to do that. And I don't think my dad really would have made it. My dad likes board games, but I just think, like, after working for a long day, the last thing that he would want to do is, like, come back and play board games with, I'm going to say with me, but it sounds like terrible.
My dad was horrible.
He was a great dad. You were just the one who was there.
Yeah. And I didn't have any other siblings, so I was like ready to do and play games and whatever, and I think my dad just wanted to like
chill,
make dinner and then chill, essentially.
Yeah, it's when you think of games as a task you have to do as opposed to a way of unwinding, I think that can happen. So if you're a gamer and you want your kids to play games, like, obviously play games with them, but make it seem like it's something fun to do, not something you have to do.
Yeah, I have a couple good memories from my childhood, too, of my mom always got to be red. Every game, anytime we were playing with her, if there was a red pawn, red pieces, whatever, she was always red. No arguments, no questions. That was the way she did it. And she always played to win. There was no letting the kids win, no backing down. And when you finally beat mom, it felt so good. She just creamed us at everything. And then I remember playing Clue with my dad, and he used the tactic where you ask something that you have in your hand to get more specific information. And like the first time I figured out that you could do that, I was just like, my mind is blown as a child. Like, oh my gosh. And it was like a whole new way to play this game that, I had been playing the really straightforward, like, just ask a question, get as much information as you can in one question. So...
And then,
those are some more.
And then you use that strategy over and over and over, and you become predictable because everyone knows you're always going to be using one of the cards in your hand. It's like, okay, she just asked this. I have this, which means she has the other two. And yep. Interesting fact about the red player. There's been statistics on this, and the red player usually wins. Or it has the highest win percentage across all the other colors.
That sounds like a fake study.
No, it's something about... Well, all right.
Something about the color makes you win?
Apparently. Yeah.
It's a very aggressive color.
I think it's...
Or people who are insane, like my mother,
yes.
choose it.
I think that's what it might be, is the most competitive people choose red, so they are the more likely to win. So I can't cite this study. I don't know where it's at. If you want to send us some feedback and let me know I'm wrong or right, cite the study so I can say, see, Fletcher, see? Totally made up statistics right here. Let's see. Do you guys have any games that you still own from your childhood?
No, my mom is a hoarder and she kept them all. My mom still owns all of my childhood games.
Which sort of counts because you live like 10 steps away from there. So
it's true. And I still get to see them and play them. And I'm sure that she, if she could figure out how a podcast works, she would listen to this and be like, oh my gosh, get them out of my basement, please. But I don't know. I like the comfort of them still being there.
Most of the games that I grew up with are also at my parents' house, if they're still even there. So I'm not sure. I went away to college. It's not like I could bring a bunch of games with me. And then I got my own place and I just never brought them over.
So next time you go home, now that you're on a gaming podcast, check and see what old games you have down there.
Yeah. You say down there, but it's Texas. There's no basements.
Oh, which never made sense to me. Because really? Texas, basements are kind of a Midwest thing, I think. At least that's where you see them. I mean, I grew up in the Midwest, so it's like everybody has a basement. But when you go south, sometimes they'll have a cellar in the south where it's like a detached thing. But yeah, I don't know. I do think the country's becoming more architecturally similar. So we probably have a lot more basements in modern homes. But yeah.
This is not architectural talk. But the reason why there's no basements in Texas, or at least in Austin where I grew up, is because you go down a few feet and you hit limestone, just like solid limestone.
Oh.
So you can't go down more than a few feet without like hitting rock, essentially, and then putting in a basement that way is just way too expensive.
See, in the Midwest, we'll build basements anywhere, and this is why we have flood zones all over the place.
Even if they don't belong there?
Yeah. It's like, oh, it's kind of like New Orleans, right, where they build everything below the flood line. Like, in the Midwest, all of our basements tend to be below some flood line somewhere, so you have to, like, seal everything in and worry about, oh, we had a heavy rain, did the basement flood? So, good basements don't flood, by the way. If you don't live in the Midwest and you're like, why would you have a basement if everything floods? Most of the time, basements don't flood. But every once in a while, when you go down into
your sump pump running, and you've got all your gravel pits dug around, all the good stuff.
Yep. You know. And to bring it back to what we're talking about, since the basement is where games are stored and oftentimes in boxes on the ground, the fastest way to lose childhood games is a flood in the basement. Now, what I should do is segue into that's why I don't have any games from my childhood. But actually, I moved around a lot as a kid. So we didn't actually bring a lot of things from place to place. And many of the games I played as a kid, they weren't ours. Like, my family didn't own them. It was a cousin or a friend down the street or something like that. So I don't really have anything from my childhood until about high school. We'll go middle school, late middle school, when I started playing role-playing games. And I still have a couple role-playing books from that time, but that is like kind of the only thing that I have from then. I wish I could have like some, you know, fancy chess set that my grandparents gave me or something like that, and I don't. Nope. Chinese checkers. I guess my grandmother played that with me at one point. I think it was talked about that I would get Chinese checkers when they passed away, but I never got it. So I bought my own copy of it, and I've never played it because Chinese checkers is not very good.
It's not that fun of a game.
No, it really isn't. Joe says that he doesn't have any heirloom games per se, things that were passed down, but he does still think he has Scattergories from his childhood. And I think that's probably the most common games. If you have something from your childhood, it's Parker Brothers, maybe Hasbro. I'm missing one of the big ones, and then possibly Avalon Hill. Those seem to be the games that would be most likely to get passed on.
Yeah. An old board of Monopoly.
You guys have anything that's been left to you? Any inheritances of games? Like, Fletcher, is your grandfather still alive?
No, he passed away a few years ago.
Then you didn't get anything from him?
I think he kind of bequeathed everyone all the games that he had, or got rid of them in like yard sales and stuff, like years and years ago. Like, after I grew up and was in high school and then went to college, I think he got rid of a lot of stuff. Or like, we would buy games and then he would just give them to me. Like, it's like, here, you can just keep this, like, take it home,
right? So give it to me and play it. Yeah, I didn't mean to sound callous. I was just like, oh, so your grandfather didn't leave you anything? Jeez, he's been the worst guy ever. No, it's interesting though how, because you inherit, like when that happens, when a parent passes or a grandparent passes, you tend to inherit all of these things and their memories, right? You get these games, or, well, you get just about anything, but if we're talking about specific games, you get something that from your childhood that you remember playing with them and you don't want to throw it away. But then again, the memory isn't really the memory is what's important. The game itself is not as much.
Yeah.
So you take these games and you keep them, but it's not because you want to play that game again. It's because you want to hold on to that memory for as long as you can.
Monopoly. Like, do I really want to play Monopoly?
No. Really.
Also, if they were games you played a lot as a kid, like, we trashed our games. Our Monopoly money was like garbage. It had had Dr. Pepper spilled on all of it. It was crumpled. It was torn. Half of it was missing. No one knew where the thimble was. There, you know, like the pieces go missing, bits are gone. So we would go through the same games over and over again. Like I talked about Clue. I think we owned three or four versions of Clue, just the basic Clue game, because we kept missing cards, like the cards. And then, oh, I solved it. No, I didn't. We were short two cards and no one noticed. You know? Like that happened to us more times than I can think of. So I don't know if games that are well loved by children are necessarily good games to think of as heirloom games.
I can think the one thing that I think this could be applied to are chess sets. Because there are so many, like you can get your basic chess set, you know, and your $10 plastic chess pieces. But if you have a parent or grandparent or family member that really, really likes chess, there are some really cool chess sets that you can get. True. And I'm not a huge chess fan. I think I would be if my, you know, teenage years, I had someone to play it with. Because I played it when I was younger, but in my teenage years, chess was not on the radar. But I've walked by some chess sets where I'm like, okay, that's $1,000, but I want it. I like really, really want it. I'm not going to buy it because it's $1,000, but that is so cool that it's just its own piece of furniture almost that you can play with as well. And I don't know, there's just something about that concept of having that like solid piece of something that you can pass on.
I was going to say, I don't have that really with a chess set, but my mom really likes to play Mahjong.
Yes.
And she has a really, really expensive like Mahjong set that she likes to play with. And just thinking about that, like that's totally like an heirloom thing.
Yep.
Like I don't even really like the Mahjong all that much, but that set is just so beautiful. Like I don't know what I'm going to do with it.
Yeah. But it's like something like that, because Sydney's mom also really loves Mahjong. And, you know, she also has this really fancy set. And
what is it with Jewish women?
I don't know. But, like, having that set, even if you never played it, you know where it came from. And you know the joy that our Jewish parents got out of playing this game, or non-Jewish, or whatever person playing these games. Again, it's like that passing on of the emotion of what was there. And, like, I don't know that you can pass it down too many generations, though. Because if I were to pass down, you know, something that I got from my mother or my grandmother and pass it down to my children, they wouldn't have those emotional connections to it. To them, it'd be a bunch of plastic sort of dominoes that don't make any sense, right? So,
well, you can teach them the stories and tell them, like, this is your grandmother, you know, and give them the history. And if you impart that story to them, then it does have the memory, and maybe not the direct memory of the person, but they have a memory of you telling them that story. And, you know, don't discount that, you know, and like maybe you can teach them how to play. And maybe even if you don't play often, it's not your game, like cribbage, maybe it's going to skip a generation. You don't know. Like that's kind of a fun part of this heirloom side of things, is that these games might find a new audience in our children that maybe, you know, we had lost interest in, that they'll pick up and be like, what is this? Tell me about it. And you'll find a renewed interest in it later in life.
Speaking of cribbage, and I want to do an alternate a twist on this same question. But first I want to get to Christopher Dong mentioned games that he inherited from his grandparents. The 3M sports series games from 1966. He said Thinking Man's Golf, Thinking Man's Football, and Regatta, and Speed Circuit. These are real 3M versions of with plastic covers and wraparound in the boxes. So basically, Avalon Hills did some reprints of these, but 3M, most of us know this like an office supply company and other, mm-hmm. you know, basically 3M makes everything now, but they used to make games back in the 70s. And he has a set of those that he still has. He also says he has a classic 1960s 3D chess set with full board with three board levels. So it's like the actual 3D chess as opposed to the one they did on Star Trek. But so now, Fletcher, you mentioned that you had played Regatta. Like I haven't played any of these games.
So I actually have played and own Regatta. And I think my dad had this game as a kid or somehow got it. And he described it perfectly well. Like it is like a, it's like a cardboard board box that's like wrapped in plastic, like a plastic that would be like on a plastic couch cover or something like that.
Huh?
Yeah.
So like soft plastic,
Yes.
Like vinyl.
Yeah. It's not like plastic wrapped, but it's actually like in plastic.
I mean, I like guess. The couch cover brings back very specific grandparent memories for me too.
It's like that kind of plastic in a way. And I have actually played the Regatta, and it's a good game, and that actually kind of like got me into sailing. And my dad liked that game because he liked sailing. And it's a regatta race is basically what it is.
And it comes in a plastic
wind direction. Yeah.
And it comes in a plastic bag. So it's waterproof if you want to take it on a sailboat.
So you can play it on your boat.
So other ways of inheriting games though. So inheriting a physical game is probably rarer than inheriting game rules. So I mentioned like, you know, playing Rummy. Rummy is just a card game, and we play specifically Michigan Rummy or Gin Rummy. I think they're the same thing, but they probably have slightly different rules because that's what you do when you put a state in front of it. But those types of games being passed down, like I can't imagine you and Spencer having a child that doesn't know how to play spades by the time he's seven. Like
if that our Spencer's cousin is also 5 years old and he can play spades.
So for that, so like, what about those types of things? Like game sets of game rules that were passed down. Typically these are going to be dice games, a standard dice or card games. Like outside of spades, what else have you guys learned from your parents or grandparents that you definitely are going to teach your kids or that you could easily play today because you played it so much that's kind of ingrained in your brain?
War.
There you go.
Oh, yeah.
That's a good one. Oh, how much fun that is going to be. But that's great to play with like three, four, five-year-olds because you're just kind of comparing card numbers, you know, the size of cards. And they just have to know what the rules are, and they can. It's really swingy, and there's, you know, there's no decisions to be made, so it makes a really great young kid
it's
game.
It's completely chance.
Yeah, I love it.
Slapjack in that same vein. Slapjack or
wait, how does slapjack play?
It's a lot like war, except every time you see a jack, the first person to slap it gets to take the cards.
So physical card games. All right, all right.
I played a lot of solitaire. My mom taught me how to play. She would play on the computer, and I was always very interested in what she was doing, and she would get out the deck of cards and show me. And when we went to a lake house one time in Michigan, there was a deck of cards there, and she taught me how to play clock solitaire because she thinks that's the most fun way to see if all of the cards are present in a deck of cards, is that when you play clock solitaire, it sorts out the deck for you. So if you got stuck, then you knew there weren't enough cards in the deck. So you'd move on to the next one. There was like a drawer full of cards, and I spent a few days sorting them all out, doing that.
I think that's
hidden a task.
Yeah.
This is a game. No, really.
Yeah, it's close to 52 card pickup, only you have to count the cards as you pick them up. Yeah, I actually, the drawer of cards, that was something that I do remember pretty much anywhere you went. You know, there was always a drawer that just had a ton of decks of cards in there. And you had your euchre deck, your bridge decks, your, you know, poker decks. Like, you know, you'd combine different decks. Like, they were just tons of different types of card games.
And there was always the pinochle deck. And you would always get stuck. Is pinochle the one where you've got, like, it's not the right numbers of cards? It's, like, only the suit card or only the, like, yeah.
I'm pretty sure that, yeah, I don't know what it is.
Ace.
Yeah, but pinochle was...
I'm not 80, so I don't know.
Yeah, pinochle is not... I've never played it.
It's not the right cards. And every time I'd get stuck with, the, like, you'd go trying to find cards and all you could find were Pinochle decks? Or was this only something that happened in my house?
No, well, I had similar experiences with Euchre. So Euchre is a game that I think is mostly Midwest. Outside of the Midwest, it's kind of a niche thing. You'd have to have someone brought it to you.
I call it like North Woods. It's like Illinois doesn't play it. It's like a Wisconsin, Michigan, UP.
Yeah, I've never heard of it.
So the way Euchre plays is you take the 9 through the ace out of the deck of cards, and all the lower cards just go away, except for the 5s. You keep the 5s for scoring, and it's a trick-taking game, so it's played with 4 people. And what you're trying to do, it's your standard trick-taking where you're going to deal out all the cards except for 4, you're going to flip one up, you're going to say, okay, I want this to be Trump or not. You're going to go around the table and everyone's going to say whether or not they want that to be Trump. If you do, then you have to take 3 of the 5 tricks. Otherwise, you lose a point. If you do, you get a point. If you take all 5, you get more points. And then you track the points. The first one to 10 wins, and you use the dots on the 5s to track. It's a really, really good game. But that's one of those games I was like raised with. And if you grow up in Michigan or Wisconsin, you just know this game. Like, I don't know how you don't know it, because anytime you have 4 people together and you deck of cards, you can play Euchre. And it's this trash talking kind of game too. Like, we played it a lot in college. So we used to have, you know, the skunking rules. If you lost 10-0, you had to run around the building naked was our college house rule. So as far as I know, no one actually did it, but I used to be really good at it too. So that's that game. And then obviously, like I mentioned, Rummy, I think Hearts.
Cribbage was one for me.
Yeah, Cribbage. Cribbage is one. Ugh, it's its own language. And I went back to try to learn it again. That game cannot be learned without playing it. You have to play it multiple times to be able to speak the language of Cribbage. And it's fascinating to hear. Like, I remember going through and it's like, and 2's for 1 point and this for 6 and that for 3 and this whatever. And you're like, what? And it has 2 pegs on the board so you can keep track of how far it's going ahead. So you can Cribbage is great. We talked about it before, and Terrence actually mentioned having some old Cribbage boards and stuff, but I love that.
I just remembered another game from my childhood that I used to play a lot that has now been monetized, and that is Mafia. And we would play it with a deck of cards, and now it's Werewolf. It's just like they have named the different roles different things, but I would play this with my cousins all the time. We were up at the cabin in Michigan, and anytime it rained, we would spend the day playing Mafia. And we would play it in car trips, too. It was a great one because you don't have to have any pieces or boards. It's just, you know, all talking. So we would do this when I was going on mission trips with my youth group. There was tons of this, which is maybe why I got burnt out on it and I don't like Werewolf anymore.
And the driver should never play, though, because you have to close your eyes at night, and that's a bad idea.
The driver was always the narrator.
Oh, that's great. That makes a lot of sense. Yeah, I never played Mafia. I didn't know Mafia existed until I played Werewolf. But 9 times out of 10, when I'm describing how to play Werewolf, I ask, have you played Mafia? And if they say yes, I'm like, it's exactly that, except there's werewolves instead of mobsters. And because I don't think Mafia has ever been in print, at least not in mass release, as the game people grew up with.
Not as far as I know.
Yeah, you always just used a regular deck of cards. Mm-hmm. All right. We thought we were going to not have enough to fill this. We have way more than enough to fill this. So we're going to go on to the next question here. Do you think that the rate at which games are coming out now, that this idea of passing these games that we've been talking about down to our kids, is that going to happen? Are we going to choose to play, you know, Mafia over Werewolf, which would be a pretty good one? Like, my kids are never going to know how to play Mafia because, you know, we know Werewolf and it's the newer thing. But more likely, am I going to teach my kids checkers? Or am I going to pick another game that's like a really family-friendly kids game that's better than checkers, prettier than checkers? And is this part of our hobby where for the last couple decades, we've gotten so many games and they're always coming out with new stuff? Are the old stuff that we grew up with, is that stuff that we're going to like teach our kids or teach the next generation? Like, what do you guys think?
I think that good games are going to stick around. I think that games that are heirloom quality games are going to become heirlooms. Games that we are going to teach our kids. You know, you have to treat your games with respect. You have to be careful with the pieces. Like, the components of these games that we have now are so much better and are going to last so much longer than the ones I remember from my childhood. And so I think the games that really capture your heart, that you really hold on to, games that you've had in your collection for years, are going to stick around, are going to be worth sharing with our kids. And that there's also going to be a lot of stuff that doesn't stick around, that it's only going to be the few that like hit the mark with your family. And it's going to be different for every family, maybe.
Yeah. And I guess like what the kids like cling on to, what they like, you know, if they're just, you know, checkers is dumb, they're not going to play it. But it, I don't know. But like,
look at chess. I don't think chess is going to go anywhere.
No, chess right. is the test of time. And so is checkers, for that matter. Like, checkers sure. is just the game you start with. You know, here's a board game. I'll pull out checkers, whatever. I don't own a board of checkers, but I own a board, a checker board, I guess, where you could put anything on there.
I think a lot of those, like, I guess I'll call them, like, ancient games, like, they're not going anywhere.
Yeah.
Because everyone owns, like, a chess set, pretty much. Everyone owns a checker board. Everyone probably has, like, a Chinese checker board as well
that you can although play. Now that I think about it, I don't actually own any of those things.
Yeah, that's what I'm so we did an episode on ancient games. I don't know what the episode number is, but I think that was the exact
I want to say it's 60 title.
It's probably it was a relatively early one.
It's like Moncala.
Yeah, Moncala, Go, checkers, chess, there was
backgammon
is one of the oldest games out there. Funny story, Chinese checkers, relatively new, like developed in the 60s or 70s or something like that. Like,
really?
Yeah. Yep.
Oh.
So just cater, you know, kind of riding on the coattails of checkers. But yeah, I don't think they're going anywhere, but you're right. I don't own any of them.
Yeah. But a lot of them, I think people play online versions.
Yeah.
I think you can play them so easily in a digital space. I have checkers on my phone. I bought a 2-person playable checkers one time when me and Spencer were sitting in an airport, and that was something we could do together instead of individually staring at our phones. We started playing checkers on my phone.
I did that with Moncala. I have a Moncala app on my phone.
I have chess on my computer, and it beats me when I put it on easy mode. So
I don't play it very often. It knows all the opening moves.
It does.
But yeah, I'm kind of interested to see, and I almost think that it's sort of instinctual. These games, like, they're part of our genetic culture almost, where if you don't know how to play chess, you know enough about chess where you could be taught it relatively quickly. And even though you never, you know, if someone was to say, I haven't played a game of chess in probably decades, but if someone were to put a chess board in front of me, I could just tell them exactly, this is how you play, this is what your goal is, and here are the rules, ready, go. Same thing for checkers, obviously. Although I will say most people do not play with the forced jump rule in checkers, which makes checkers a completely non-strategic game. But if you play with that, if you can jump, you have to jump. There's a lot more strategy and depth in checkers than what first meets the eye.
Hmm. Yeah, it can be really tricky. The app made us do that. And suddenly it was like, you have to be looking a lot more carefully.
Yeah, I think I told this story on the Ancient Games episode, but right out of college, I was writing video games, and one of the games I wrote was checkers, and I wrote it with the correct rules, and my boss was playing it, you know, testing it out, and it forced him to take a jump, and he was so mad because it was actually a bad move for him. And he's like, no, that is not how checkers works. You can't do this. I'm like, it is how it works. Like, that is the rules. I'm like, you're downloaded online. These are the rules. And he's like, no, take it out. So we ended up compromising. And we had two versions of checkers with two different versions of art. One was frog checkers, which was the kids version where you didn't have to take the jump. And then the other one was alien checkers. He had flying saucers that were jumping over each other. And that one, you had to take the jump if you could. So it's like, that was our compromise there. But all right. How do we turn our kids into gamers? Like, what games do we have right now that we want to pass on? And I'm going to start with our inputs because we've talked about this a little bit, but I love what, Joe says here. He says, anything they want that I don't veto. Boss Monster, take it. Scythe, get your grubby hands off my game, Spawn. I like that a lot. It's like, yeah, I'll pass it on to you as long as I don't want it anymore, which is what I do every year at Gen Con. And then Christopher mentions, he's like, do I plan on leaving games to my son? Sure. But I think it'll be more like, daddy died, and now what are we going to do with all these board games? Rather than at the reading of the will, I bequeathed to my son my copy of Viticulture Essentials Edition, and to my stepdaughter a copy of Tuscany Essentials Edition Expansion. These games must remain separate unless they are actively being played, after which they must be separated and returned to their designated owner. I love bringing board games together after you pass on, or using board games to bring your family together after you pass on. I may have to write a will just like this. So, Christopher, I'm taking it, I'm stealing it. I'm going to LegalZoom right now and getting that all set up. But, and this is what I've been thinking about a lot. And I'm curious, like, Kitty, do you have any games that, like, you played that you want to pass on, like, as a child or today, like, things that you, something that's affected you enough where you just want, you know, player three to be a part of that game? And
I can't imagine any child of mine not knowing how to play Carcassonne.
Okay.
And there's a few other maybe that, like, would go in that category, but Carcassonne was the one where I was like, you know, this is the game that I teach people. This is the one that I, you know, if I have my friends over, I'm like, let's play this. Let's get this out. And I just think it's so fun. And I think, you know, this is one of the ones where I don't think it's going anywhere in the publishing world. I don't think they're going to take it off shelves. I think, you know, people are still buying it. They're going to keep making it for a while to come, at least. And I think maybe it'll be a cool, like, oh, I have my mom's old vintage version of Carcassonne. Yeah. We have some games like this where we have Millborn, and we've got a really old copy of it. And you can go to the store and still buy this, but the old cool one, like with the 70s kind of faded art on it, is something neat in our collection.
Yeah, I like that. What about you, Fletcher?
I don't know. Like, I feel like all the games I have, or most of the games, are party games that I have.
Yeah.
So, I mean, as my game collection grows, like, maybe, but at this point, I'm, you know, like, not having any offspring, I can say, like, yeah, sure, like, anything you want, you can take it.
Well, party games are a good example of something that you inadvertently pass on. You know, Pictionary, for example. I mean, you don't need a box to play Pictionary. You know, you just put...
Speaking of games, we never follow the rules.
Exactly, right? And, you know, the idea, if you've never played Pictionary, then you grew up, probably were born late 90s and beyond. But before that, Pictionary was the party game. And there was even a TV game show of celebrity Pictionary.
Yeah.
Where people were playing Pictionary on TV. And the idea is that you're trying to draw out as many words as you can in a time limit. So we have similar things now. Telestration is sort of like Pictionary, but without
it's
the
like
time
better
pressure.
Pictionary.
Yeah. It's everyone plays at the same time, Pictionary type of thing. But I mean, I can imagine teaching, you know, if my kid's having a sleepover or something, I'm like, okay, here's this game that I can teach you that I don't have to worry about you messing with my pieces, because there's like, you know, 10 grubby little hands down there. You know, all I need to do is give you a marker and a board, and you guys can play this Pictionary game. Go ahead.
For me, I always preferred Taboo over Pictionary.
I love Taboo.
I hated drawing, and I like all of my illustrations never came out to anything. It's like Picasso. I don't know, Picasso. Is it Picasso again? Oh man, I don't know.
I think it's going to be really funny when player three is, you know, going off to college or something, and he finds Grandma and Grandpa's old catchphrase. Like, oh, let's put some batteries in here. Who are all these people? He's not going to know, like, especially the people categories. There's like all these sports players and musicians that are so fleeting in popularity that it's going to be kind of hilarious, I think, to see what happens there.
Yeah. And I love Catchphrase. I haven't played it in a long time, but it's like, as a party game, I really like that game. And I'm wondering if, because it has a digital component, if that is going to be something that doesn't get passed down, because Heads Up is a very similar concept where you're kind of that hot potato type of thing. But
it's an app that gets support and it gets people taken out of it as they lose their relevancy.
Right. You know, so it doesn't get passed on. But I think it is interesting because, yeah, you open this up because there are these old electronic video games from the 70s and 80s that if I had those, I would play them today. They're terrible. But it's just like this little, you know, you're running a marathon. It's a bip, 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 bip. You know, that's my sound effects for, I think that was everything, but I remember playing like football with this and it had nothing to do with football. It really had nothing at all. But the game was shaped like a football stadium and you had to like get this dot to the other side and you'd have other dots coming at you moving left and right that you had to, you know, run around. And it just, I played those forever in that digital form. And if I had them today, I'd play them. I would call them heirloom games, but I'm not going to go out and track them down. It was just like these memories of my childhood. And now, you know, my kid's going to be like the Switch 2 or whatever comes out next.
Look at this Switch. They have all the old NES games. If you buy the online subscription, you get all of the old games for, you know, bundled in with that. And Spencer still plays Super Mario World and those kinds of games, and I'm sure that he's going to teach them to Player 3 when he's old enough to learn them, and he's going to teach him how to cheat just like he does.
If my kids were playing Zelda, like, you know, at 7 years old, they're playing the original Zelda, that is a game that I could just sit there and watch them play, like, because mm-hmm. I have so many memories of a game like that, and that type of thing I would like to pass on too, which, you know, bonus content, video games versus board games, because we talk about board games mostly on this, but every once in a while there is a crossover there, and those types of video games, I'm hesitant to allow free access to video games because I think board games are more tactile. There's more thinking involved, there's more family time involved, there's more social involved. So I'm like, I want to in my, you know, I don't know, it's not realistic, but the idealistic world, I would say, oh yeah, we're going to play board games instead of video games. But if my parents had done that to me, my life would be completely different because it was the love of video games that got me into technology, that got me into wanting to program and write video games, that got me...
That got you to where you are now.
Exactly. You know, so like, it's hard to say what is right and wrong, and you know, video games are not bad. It's just like this balance that I'm going to want to strike and say, yes, if you play this board game, you can play this video game. But that's bad too, because then I'm saying the board game is the work to go play the really good video game.
No, you just want to... I think this is how to turn your kid into a gamer. This is my theory. I don't know if it'll work because my kid is one. but Chris, I think you get them into what you want to do. You do things with them. And if you're playing video games with them and you're playing board games with them, they're going to like them both. They're going to learn them both. They're going to think of them as fun things they did with their parents, that it was cool time they spent together. And sure, maybe with their friends, they'll only play video games because, who plays board games? But if you teach them how much fun board games could be, they could be the one who teaches all their friends the board games, that your house is the house they come to play, you know, viticulture. Look at my dad's cool old viticulture copy. Isn't it so neat?
Fletcher?
Oh, I was just going to say, like, if you think that you're getting out of family Fortnite Fridays in 2029, you're sorely mistaken.
Oh, I'm sorry. Fortnite Friday. That's sad. That's so sad. But it's entirely possible. I mean, Minecraft was the thing for like a decade and a half, right? Like
it's
every
still
kid.
A huge thing with kids. Yeah. Still huge. Kids now, love Minecraft.
Now, I will say there is one thing I do want to mention as a way of getting kids into gaming. Two things, actually, that I truly believe. Like everything else is sort of, you know, it could work with some kids or not. But if you want your kid to be into gaming, it needs to be something you do with them. And not something where you just buy them a game and throw it at them. Sometimes that sticks. Oftentimes that interaction and, you know, them being interested, you being interested in what they're interested in, that's kind of the key there. And a good way to do this is story-based games or role-playing games. Like, my kids are going to play their first, you know, Dungeons & Dragons when they're 4 or 5 years old. Because you can at that age. You have the imagination at that age that is just off the chart and so much fun to play with kids of that age. And
you think player three will be DMing by that point?
Maybe.
When Zach is four?
Yep. Or I'll be running a game for both of them, or you will be running a game for both of them. You know, because I think at that age, take advantage of that imagination. Yeah. I have a bunch of nieces and nephews, and I swear, from 3 to 6, if you can just bottle all of the just crazy ideas that come out of their mouths and any of that stuff, you could make into really, really fun and compelling games. And you just have to encourage that. You have to encourage that that's a fun thing, and making stuff up is fun.
So you are against my mother's theory of setting yourself up as the enemy who must be toppled.
I think sometimes that's okay. But I think at a younger age,
she was always
age,
the queen of the board game. You had to take her down.
Yeah, I just think at younger ages, it's more fun to win with your parents against a common enemy than it is to fight with your parents. And I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
I think both are fun.
Yeah.
I think there's value to each, and there's, you know, value to competitive and cooperative board games each. And I think that a little bit of both is where the fun actually is the mix of it all.
Yeah. And it probably has something to do with personality types too, as far as what personalities would like to be introduced to co-op games versus competitive games early on. And maybe that's how you tell if you're what personality type your child is whether or not they want to be like the winner.
Which board game they enjoy.
Yeah. All right. Anything else on heirloom games?
I don't think so.
I think this was
good.
Yeah. This is a fun thing to think about, especially as you start having families and you know, the people who do have families. Thank you everyone for your input, and give us feedback too. Cause I think that this sparks just a lot of ways to think about stuff and how this really worked, especially with like just looking back at what you did when you were growing up. I think that's kind of cool.
Yeah, I'm really interested to get some feedback on this one.
Okay, I do not have any news or announcements that I didn't already do at the top of the show. So we'll remind that Dice Tower Network or Dice Tower News is going to be on this feed for the month of February. You can also just subscribe at Dice Tower News. But just for that, to give you a sample of what Kitty and I have been up to, Zach was born and he's crying downstairs now. So I'm going to go down there right after this. And then our next convention, we will have our Gen Con show. And then I'll be at Gary Con, Adepticon, Gaming Hoopla, Origins, and Gamehole Con. But again, I'll give you more details on those things as we get closer. If you want to follow us, you can follow us at Facebook at Tabletop Game Talk Podcast. Twitter is at Tabletop Game TLK. Kitty is Lawful Good Mom. Fletcher is Net Fletch. All right. And I am Game Master Chris. If you want to support us via Patreon, you can go to tabletopgametalk.com/Patreon.
Tabletop Game Talk is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. Thanks for listening. And remember, we love your feedback. So email us with comments or questions about today's topic at feedback@tabletopgametalk.com. And you'll be entered into a $50 gift card drawing on our next feedback episode.
Finally, thank you. A huge thank you to our patrons. Emil Jildam, George, Adam Harrison, the SGC, Thomas Achiretti, Samir Biswas, Jason Strong, Terrace Miltner, Steven Seitz.
Michael Old, Brian Arnla, you, Fletcher, you're throwing me off. Brian Arnold, Sean P. Kelly, C. Marie, Rudy Liu, Benjamin Heimowitz, Jerry Hong, Stephen Phillips, Caleb O'Brien,
Jennifer Engelbrecht, Justin Willard, Christopher Dong, Jason Marks, Jeremy Fisher, David Radke, Nick Quickstra, David Sellers,
Jason Rodney, Michael Yanikowski, Miles Clark, Cindy Lum, Phil Schwartzel, John Livingston, Chad Covey, and Reynolds.
And Jordan Livingston, too. Eric Hoffman, Adrian Dong, Christopher Vincent, Nate Faz Bunsum, Sean Peck, Eric Sealander, Mike Smith, Christine Meyer, Trevor Davis,
Wesley Traylor, Tim Vernig, Chris Lowe, Joe Hoover, Timothy Gross, Glenn Cotter, Jesse Wolkowiak, Barry Peterson, Ben Gary, Emil Jewell Jacobson, and Marina Stevens.
And I'm going to say Ben Gary because there's two R's there. So I'm just going to go with that. I know
it's Gary like Harry.
Oh, Ben, email us.
Still Harry Potter, right?
Is it Chris is right with Gary or is it Kitty's right with Gary? Until next week, keep playing games and having fun. So I think he's been crying for the past, 10 minutes. And I have a feeling that Sydney's getting stressed. So I'm going to go deal with a crying baby. And
run.
Yeah. And then run. It's Monday night. It's so for listeners, peek behind the curtain. It's Monday night at 10 p.m. This is going to drop Tuesday morning at 5 a.m. I have a feeling I'm going to be up anyway. So we'll get a podcast out on time. All right. I'll talk to you guys later.